Well, I am Mark Silber. I'm an author in Carmel, California. And I want to let you know that our show is brought to you by our good friends at Bay Photo Lab. I love these guys. They just recently made some prints for me that I have for sale in downtown Carmel. If you do come to our little town of Carmel, which is full of all sorts of interesting places, galleries, restaurants, and whatnot, you have to let me know and we'll meet up and have a cup of coffee or something. Anyway, here's what you can get discounts on right now at Bay Photo Lab. They have a special on thin wraps. You don't have to design it just like this, but they're very thin and they're cool. 20% off. 25% off on any album. Albums are basically books, so you can make a book. You can get 25% off on it, and you'll be in really good company. My good friend Bob Holmes uses Bay Photo Lab. We actually did a print run for him for a show fairly recently. And Bambi Cantrell uses them. So does Scott Kelby, all sorts of really good photographers. So you're in good company, and they're going to give you excellent, excellent, excellent underscore customer service, because that's what they're all about. Okay, so I see some other folks who have joined us. That's great to see. Kenneth from Denmark and Stephen from Essex. I probably have been through Essex. I've been to Sussex. I love Sussex. And Southern Maryland, Leon. I have family there. And JM is from Niagara. Okay, so we've got people from all over the place. All right, let's talk about, I want to talk to you guys some more about what the enemy of creativity is. And when I talk to you, I really want you to look at this. Don't just be kind of a spectator watching TV. I want this to slice through and really be something that makes a difference for you. And that's really how I like to present my material. I'm not here just to be a talking head on TV. I want it to be something that penetrates and changes your life. And that's really why I write my books, and especially Create. The thing about the book Create is it's got exercises after each chapter. Those are things that actually will move the needle for you. In other words, you will get somewhere. It's not just a matter of what you think. It's a matter of changing things in your life to allow more creativity. All right. There's the phone that I didn't silence. It's my motorcycle repairman telling me my Vespa is repaired. Okay, let's talk about this some more here. One thing I don't want you to be is your own worst enemy in terms of creativity. How can that be? Shoot yourself in the foot. Every time you minimize yourself, you think I'm not good enough, you self-criticize yourself. And by criticizing, I don't mean, well, I could do this better and therefore I'm going to follow this. That's fine. And that's a good professional way to approach things. You should always be raising the bar. I mean, I do that constantly. Every time before I release anything, and Jared knows this, we go through it so many different ways and look at it, making sure that we're delivering the best possible product. I do that with my prints. You know, I have to look at them and see if there's any little flaw, something like that. I get it fixed. I don't want to sell things that are flawed. But that's a positive professional approach. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the kind of self-criticism that goes in your head and causes you to back away. You know, it's bad enough having critics out there, but to have those critics right here. And honestly, that's what these guys out there do, the trolls and the vampires. They try to play into your own weak points. And that's their game. It is unfortunately a game that they play that you don't have to go along with it. I say that But I'm going to tell you, as any creative person, it's definitely hits you. I mean, when you see a really negative review or somebody's complaining about something that you produced or wrote or whatever, I do look at that. And it does bother me. I'm not going to pretend it doesn't bother me. I could sit here and go, oh, well, you guys should just wall yourself off. And well, it's really not that easy to do that. And I think every artist, every creative person struggles with that, because you want to be in touch with your audience. You want to know what's happening with them. And if there is something that a negative, you want to fix it. But then there's the trolls and the vampires. They are not really telling you what's going on. They're using poison, and they're taking whatever's maybe there and then blowing it up or exaggerating it or changing it or even putting words there that you didn't say. So you have to scrape those guys off. You know, it's like bird crap on your windshield. You know, you don't let that ruin your drive because some pigeon or something took your new car and just splattered all over it. And that's what it is. Just clean it off. Clean it out of the way. And don't let it drag you down. You got to immediately jump back out of that. And the best remedy for that is involve yourself in something more creative. But the self-criticism is where you're shooting yourself in the foot, not letting your own flow go and get out there. David Campbell made a big point out of that. It's in the book, Create. We have a recording of it. He said, do not do that, because sometimes when you get going on a project. Now, David Campbell, if you don't know who he has produced or been the artist himself in the neighborhood of 480 gold and platinum albums. 480. Imagine just being one of those, you know, being a producer on one of those, but 480. This guy is really, really good. And he's worked with some of the biggest artists you can imagine. His son is Beck. So he's deeply involved in the creative process. And he said, look, once you get going, sometimes it's not that great at the beginning. You got to let it flow. You got to let it flow, because if you start self-criticizing, you're going to shut yourself down. This is a really, really important point. You go out and you're going to do street photography, let's say, and you get a few shots and you go, these really suck. I am no good. I mean, don't you think we all do that? It's like, Mark, how corny. This is dumb. I'm not engaged with them. You just got to shove that aside and just keep going. What that actually is in the creative process, you know, there's five stages, right? So it starts with visualization, knowing your equipment, then go to work, you know, start capturing things, photographing, whatever it is, writing, and then you edit it. But that's a separate process. When you mix editing into your working, your doing your craft, don't do that. It's actually a very negative way to go about it, because you're shutting yourself down. You want to get your flow going. Don't self-edit, don't self-criticize, and don't self-minimize. Those are all big ones that you got to just throw out the window. What are some stories? I'm curious to hear from you guys. Somebody just left me a message on YouTube that he said he'd missed some of his best shots because he was afraid when he went out and did street photography. I know what he's talking about. That fear will paralyze you. It'll send you going this way when you should go that way. And the only difference between a pro and an amateur is the pro just has to push through. You know, we have this, we're putting out stuff constantly on Instagram as little reels, and there's one just recently, it hasn't been released yet, but it's from Bob Holmes, and you'll hear it. You guys should be following me on Instagram just for that reason. You can shut out everybody else if you want, But you should follow me because we're putting those out on Instagram. And Bob said, you know, the difference between a pro and an amateur is as pros, we have to come back with the goods. And it doesn't matter if you are hungover, if you had a big fight with your wife, if you're tired, if you've got a headache, if you've got whatever, you are an assignment. You got to come back with the goods. You don't have the luxury ever of not coming back with the photographs that you were on assignment to produce. So it's a good thing to take that attitude. And if you are scared shitless, sorry, I don't know any other way to say it, then just use that. I get scared all the time. Listen, when I go up on stage, you know, my adrenaline's jacked up. Before I go, what if I screw up? What if my equipment, you know, it's a nightmare when you're doing like a PowerPoint or something. I had a big presentation to a room full of marketing people, top marketing people. And guess what? My audio didn't work. And I was playing videos, example videos, and the audio didn't friggin' work. And I'm fiddling with it. And the worst thing in the world is you're up on stage and you're fiddling with your own laptop and you're trying to figure out why the F this isn't working. And you're trying to, you know, you maintain your cool and your poise and you're in front of marketing people. So they're looking at you. You are your own marketing at that point. So you got to remain cool. Anyway, I had this room full of marketing people. I couldn't get the audio to work. I motioned to my assistant. I said, would you go get that guy that, you know, is handling it? So he came back. He came and, you know, he's tinkering around. And all of a sudden it started working. Okay, carried on. And one of the people who was there said, Mark, you know, you demonstrated you're cool under pressure. And that's one of the reasons we decided to hire you. I got six-figure jobs out of that room, even though that of that mishap. So it's scary, right? It's scary to put yourself out there. And it's scary to deal with equipment that could go south. And it's scary to stand up in front of a group who may or may not accept you. You know, I started the presentation with what I thought was a warm-up joke, you know, nothing. Crickets. And then I said something else after that. Just, I went, well, the next thing. And somehow I got a little laugh out of the audience. But they weren't really there to be entertained by me. They weren't there to hear my jokes. They were there to learn something about video production. And I showed them. And right afterwards, I got big six-figure job out of that. And that made the whole thing definitely worthwhile. But if you don't, if you back away from those opportunities, you think I'm not good enough or I don't have my shit together well enough, don't let yourself miss those opportunities. You may never get them back. And I have missed those opportunities. I had a project. I'm just bearing my soul to you because this happens, right? I had a project. So I didn't know video production at all. I never really ever shot a video in my life, believe it or not. I was a still photographer. And I landed my sponsorship with SanDisk. This was remarkable. They actually said yes to my proposal, which was how all these interviews came about. And I said, I want to go out and interview these top pros, and I'm going to bring SanDisk into the discussion at some point. And the funny thing is they actually never said yes to me. They never said, you're hired. What they did was they invited me to lunch at the Four Seasons restaurant, Four Seasons Hotel restaurant in Palo Alto. They didn't ever say, Mark, you're hired. That was a production meeting. But I was pretty sure they weren't going to take me out to lunch to tell me I was not being hired. So I had some idea. But the funny thing was, there was no big fanfare. it was like we went into a production meeting, and that was awesome. But here I am, never having produced a single video in my life. I went for it. Fortunately, I was working with a great team who had a track record of video production. And as soon as I could, I trained myself on video production. And I just dove into it. I had to learn, you know, everything, because I found you cannot just rely on the quote expert. The first video that I shot with one of these guys that I hired was with Chase Jarvis in San Francisco. We did a whole interview in San Francisco. Standing is really cool. It's in a very iconic location. We did the shoot. We shot B-roll. You know, the next day I called him up. I said, "How's it look?" He said, "The B-roll looks great." Red flag. "What do you mean the B-roll looks great? What about the A-roll, dude?" "Well, you know, I left it on autofocus and it focused on behind you guys." So here we are. I've got Chase Jarvis, who at that time was a really big name in photography. And the first shoot I do with my new show is out of focus. And we fiddled with it for, trying to do different things. And you can't get back in focus if it's out of focus. Chase was good enough to say, "You know, that happened to me once. I hired a guy and he shot with a Red camera and it was all out of focus." Now, Chase could have just dropped me. I had no track record that he should have believed in me. I didn't have a video show. I didn't have anything. But he was kind enough to say, "Mark, just come up to Seattle. We'll reshoot it." And we did. And that really helped launch my whole show with SanDisk. And then he introduced me to all sorts of other people. So don't let those fears, I'm just trying to tell you, it happens to all of us. Don't let those fears block you. Shit is going to happen. What you want to do is be as best prepared as you can, but stuff is going to happen that you just have to work around. And I learned right away, it doesn't matter if I'm hiring somebody who says they're the greatest cinematographer in the world. I have to check their settings. I got to check their focus. I've had people blow out. Would have been a complete mess. They completely misexposed. I have to check behind every camera. It goes back to what Bob Holmes said. You are responsible for everything in the frame. And that includes the audio. That includes the way the video is being shot. That includes your still photography. You're responsible. You are responsible for everything. Does that make you more afraid or less afraid? Well, if you've got your hands on the wheel of a car, aren't you going to feel better than if you take your hands off and let it? I mean, I have a Tesla, so you can do that. You can self-drive. But it screws up sometimes, and it's not fun to have it go, you know. You keep your hands on the wheel. You're fully responsible for everything in the frame. And if you have that as a mantra in your head, I'm telling you, that will overcome all sorts of barriers. So we're carrying on our discussion about creativity. And this is really important stuff, right? Because beyond what's going on with your camera, the creative process involves the most important part of the whole process is, guess what? Who's behind the camera? That's where the creativity starts. And many people get confused about what they should be starting with. You know, do I start with knowing my equipment? Do I go take a course in, you know, cinematography or photography or whatever? Well, I just got through telling you a story about how I pitched a whole show not knowing anything about video production. So that can't hold you back. I visualized it and I pitched it and won the contract. Now, I was also using some talented people, but I actually did on-the-job training on that one and learned video editing. I learned video production. I learned you know, lighting. I learned all these skills. Don't judge me. The lighting isn't the greatest. I just moved into this new space. I don't have it well set up. But the very first step in the creative process is what? What do you think? Is it getting all involved in your gear? Is it getting complicated? Is it all these different factors? There's one place that you should start every creative process. I don't care if you're going out to shoot a wedding or photographs of your family or your cousin graduation or, you know, the kids playing baseball. It all starts with the same thing, okay? And that thing is called visualization. You got to visualize what it is. What are you trying to do here? What is the story you want to tell? What is it you want to come away with? And you can actually work back from that. Like, I don't want to just come back with routine photographs. I want to come back with something unique and special. And I have those in my head, what I'm hoping for. Now, it doesn't mean that you are only going to be shooting those photographs that you've already thought out. Ed Kashi mentioned something, and again, this is coming out as a reel on Instagram, so you should follow me. And by the way, while you're at it, do make sure you do subscribe and enable the bell, because you're going to get some great content here. But Ed Kashi mentioned this thing, you've got to be prepared for those unexpected moments. Now, I'm going to twist that around because I still feel like, and I contend that that's still a form of visualization. Just because you had to visualize where you were going to put yourself to find those unexpected moments. You didn't just randomly end up somewhere. You had to think it through and go, I'm going to this scene. These are the shots I want to come away with. And I also know there's some that I'm not even planning that are going to come up. That is part of your visualization process. I'm not kidding. It's true. So knowing that this is where the process begins, there's some things that you can do to strengthen your visualization. And the first one is do this all the time. Frame. You know, you've got to see the world through a frame, because without the frame, we're just looking out. You know, I've got a huge range of vision here, but that's not what the camera sees. The camera sees this or this. I mean, this is probably easier. Just, it's a framing tool. You know, I used to say we cut out a cardboard, take a card and we cut out a hole in it. We use that. And you can hold it up to your eye. But I, you know, the truth is you got your hands with you all the time. You can do this, and you should do this constantly to train your eye to see shots. They don't just bang you on the back of the head and go, Mark, get your camera out, shoot this. You've got to spot them. And it's like playing tennis or playing basketball. Hey, we're watching the NBA Finals. It blows my mind that these guys ever miss one of those free throws. How could you miss a free throw? You know, this is like the one thing, no matter what, you should always be able to make. But yet they do. Okay, but they practice and practice and practice. It shows you how much practice you need. How could you ever miss a shot? Well, we do. But that just means you need to do more of this, which is training your eye constantly. You're waiting for a meeting, you're waiting for a bus, you're whatever, waiting in a doctor's office, find the photograph. There is a photograph in every single space. You just have to find it. So that's point number one, train your eye constantly. And you'll look cool if you go around and you're doing this. People go, whoa, that guy must be a film director or something. He's some kind of artist. Other art forms have a similar drill. Like if you're a writer, you can listen to dialogue that people have. I'm almost done with this. It's on Prime Video. It's the story of F. Scott Fitzgerald after he was kind of washed up and became an alcoholic, he wanted to write his kind of best novel. And it's a story about this young secretary that came to work for him. And he critiqued her. She presented a story to him and he critiqued it and he really sliced her and diced her. But he made some points. If you got rid of all the negativity that he threw at her, he said, you know, your dialogue doesn't sound real to me. This isn't really what people say. And one way you can get tuned into dialogue is just listen to people. It's kind of like doing a framing thing with your ears. If you're on a bus or a subway or in an elevator or you're waiting in line, listen to people. What are they saying? How do they say it? Leonardo da Vinci did this. He had a sketch pad and he went around Florence and he sketched people in different emotions. How do they look when they're really upset and they're fighting or they're afraid or whatever it is? Like, he'd sketch that. So when he came to do his most amazing paintings, he already knew, well, first of all, he knew the human anatomy, but he knew the emotional range that people had and what they looked like. And the same thing is true for a writer or photographer. Don't ever be afraid of those emotions. Even if you are afraid, just override it. Don't be afraid to photograph somebody who's really pissed off, really angry. It's a human emotion. You shouldn't back away from it. It's one of the spectrums. You don't always want people with a smile on their face. Annie Leibovitz, look through her photographs. Nobody's smiling ever in one of her photographs. I swear she tells people to be moody. I don't know. I haven't been on a shoot with her, but she certainly never does anything to make them laugh, or she's putting them in trying to bring out an emotion that maybe they're already there, but it's kind of buried. So don't be afraid to do that. But watch, observe, take notes, listen, do this. And the second thing that's really, really, really important in terms of increasing your visualization muscles, strengthening them, is to look at other art forms and look at how they did it. Like, I just gave you an example of this movie with F. Scott Fitzgerald. I mean, I learned something from that. You know, like, yeah, he's absolutely right. You don't want fake dialogue. You don't want your character to seem shallow and unreal. Isn't it weird how we tune into things that are very, very real? Paul McCartney, I read his 2-volume book, The Lyrics. Got it for Christmas. I just dove through that. But he made just an incredible observation about one of the reasons why the Beatles have been so popular. He said, we just use everyday language in our songs. This is what people are saying. This is the words they're using. Amazing, isn't it? Just that one ingredient, the reality that we have, it hits home. I Want to Hold Your Hand was one of their first songs. And I was a teenager. Boy, that was a big deal, though. Could hold a girl's hand, man. You're really moving along. And it's interesting, but that was they capture the age that we were all at, you know, their fan, their young fans. We were already at that point. Just find those real points, but study other people's art forms. And it honestly doesn't matter whether it's music or sculpture or photography or painting. I look at design all the time. I'm really intrigued by design. Like, what makes a beautiful design? Whether it's graphics, you know, graphic arts with a logo, or the way a room or a house is designed, you know, I look at it and I feel something from that. I learn something from it. This is something you should constantly be doing. Take notes. Use your notebook. Use your, you know, we should actually sell these things. I have an AYP notebook. Boop, boop, boop. And inside cover, it actually gives you the list of things to look for when you're looking at art. Kind of handy. It's right out of the book. But those are constant skills. Don't let me hear you say I'm the worst photographer in the world. You shouldn't ever be saying that about yourself, by the way. That's bad marketing. But you can say, I know I need to improve, and this is what I'm giving you right now are the skills that you can use to make that improvement.